everybody. Happy Monday. I am so happy to be with you today. Yes. So as many of you know, I had originally scheduled this call for January 2nd, and I was excited about doing it that day because it was a federal holiday here in the United States, and it was the day after New Year's, so it was the perfect time for us to anchor into the new year. But I was vocally challenged and really feeling called at that time to just be still, to be still. And one of the things that I have learned is to follow divine guidance, to follow my intuition, trust and faith. Those of you who participated in the last 8-week Living A Course in Miracles free class that I did, you know that in week two, I our topic was trust and faith. And that is a topic that is so dear to my heart because it is my faith and my ability to trust, which demonstrates my faith, which has been very challenging for me to strengthen and get to, and it means everything to me. So I train myself to follow divine guidance, even when sometimes I question it. So here we are today, and today in the United States we celebrate the life of Martin Luther King Jr., Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who is one of my heroes, and I consider him one of my mentors, one of my spiritual mentors. And so I'll say more about that. I'm just giving folks a couple of minutes to get into the call and settle down. And I will be taking questions later on the phone and on the web. So let us anchor in here on this Monday with a prayer. I'm inviting you to place your hand on your heart as I am doing. Those of you who are my daily prayer partners, you know that we do this all the time. So, feeling that breath moving in and out. I always invite people to sit in a class or a meditation in prayer, spine erect. It helps the energy flow more clearly. So we do everything we can to support ourselves in receiving clear insight and receiving the healing that we are calling forth. In this moment, we indeed are calling forth strength, clarity, purity of mind and intention. We're calling forth divine grace into every aspect of our life, into our awareness. Breathing in love, we're calling forth an awakening and a healing at the very highest levels that we can hold and maintain. Lifting our vibration to the high vibration of love and gratitude. Anchoring ourselves in receptivity, we make ourselves available for divine insight and inspiration to flow through each and every one of us right now. We're in a divine partnership with the oneness of all life, for truly we are united. And so our healing and our expansion is something we can share the benefits of with everyone. And we do that intentionally right now so that all are lifted. We're dedicating ourselves to having the very best year of our life, the most expansive, the most awakening, the most healing and nourishing. And where we can bring the most benefit in service to God and humanity. So grateful and so thankful right now to anchor ourselves in an awareness of the truth that sets us free. In gratitude, we let it be, and so it is. Amen. Yes. So, I'm going to just share with you some of the things that I've learned over the years. In, I'm not sure when it was. I think it might have been 1997. 1997, I believe it was. I went on a couple of meditation retreats with my minister and teacher, Michael Beckwith, founder of the Agape International Spiritual Center in Los Angeles. If you haven't heard of him, you might have seen him in The Secret on Oprah. Anyway, at New Year's 2007, I went on a retreat with Reverend Michael and his wife, Ricky. Though I don't know if they were married then. Anyway, I don't think that, no, they weren't. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Just brought up memories. And I went on the New Year's meditation retreat with them. It was a silent meditation retreat, usually 4 days, 3 nights, something like that. And silent, very restorative, very nourishing. And I did that for 10 years. And the last evening would be the New Year's night, New Year's Eve. And so I developed this practice of ringing in the new year in the silence and meditation. And I often found that on that New Year's Eve, I would have a profound healing, profound. And sometimes I would be sitting in the silence just bawling like a baby, quietly sobbing, because I would be releasing so much resentment, unforgiveness, hurt, that the few days of meditation had really loosened it up for me. And my intention was so high to leave the past behind and to step into the new year with more love and the ability to be my true self, a loving spiritual being. And what I learned from Reverend Michael was to set an intention for the year. So many people set resolutions for the year. I learned to set intentions. And a resolution, it feels like something I'm going to make myself do. It doesn't feel kind and loving. It doesn't feel gentle and graceful. An intention, to me, is more in line with an aspiration, and I actually prefer the word aspiration. So, if you will, I'm inviting you to be willing to set an aspiration for your year. Now, what many people do when they start thinking about intentions and aspirations is they go into goals. What are their goals? So I want to explain the difference here. An aspiration, to me, is something, it is a spiritual intention or a spiritual goal, if you will, that has to do with how I would like to be as a human spiritual being. So an aspiration is, what is it that I aspire to be? It could also be what I aspire to do, but I feel, based on my many years of really examining this, my sense is that the most powerful thing I can do for myself is to set an aspiration of how to be. And I'll give you an example. So let's say you have a goal in your life. And let's say you're an entrepreneur, because many of the people who are drawn to the teachings I offer are what I call lightpreneurs. So they're entrepreneurs who have some kind of work that they do that brings more light and love into the world. They're teachers, they're life coaches, they're in the healing arts of some kind, or they're spiritual teachers, ministers, and practitioners. So you could set a goal, let's say, to grow your business this year by 12%. That's a great goal. Has a lot of components to it. Will definitely give you focus for the year. However, at the end of the year, it might not make any difference in your life, except that maybe you'll have more money. Maybe you'll have more money, maybe you'll have more influence, but you could grow your business 12% and actually not have any more money, you know, because you have greater expenses, or because you spend it, or because you have some kind of a challenge that creates an expense that absorbs it all, and then where are you? So not that you wouldn't want to set a goal like that, but if you make that the focus of your life, then you are confining yourself to the 3D world of effects, to time and space, to bringing the best of yourself to that which is temporal, that which is temporary. However, you could set your primary aspiration to be at peace and to truly understand, know, and embody the peace of God. And let me tell you, if you're in the healing arts and you embody the peace of God, people will come out of the woodwork to find you. It's so true. It's so true. Being the peace, being the love, being the compassion, being the harmony, being the clarity, being the wisdom. This is what I wrote about in my blog today, which you can read at jenniferhadley.com. Being these spiritual qualities, embodying them, aspiring to fully represent them in your life, will make you magnetic. You will naturally magnetize to you people who can be benefited by being in your presence. And even without saying a word, you will teach and demonstrate the power of choosing to embody these spiritual qualities. So I encourage everyone to set an aspiration that feels extraordinary. Like, I'm going to be a wholly loving and compassionate being. 24/7 to the very best of my ability. Isn't that what you really want anyway? I mean, if you could increase your money 50%, but you have no sense of being anchored in love and compassion and harmony, would you really be in a place that you'd like to be? My friend Gary Renard says, we already know that money can't buy us happiness, but sometimes we feel like, I just want to be sure, so we keep working for the money. I remember one year on the meditation retreat, Reverend Michael asked me what was my intention that I was setting for the year. And I said my intention was to work only for love, to work only for love. I also said that I wanted to stop trading time for money, so that was a goal, to stop trading time for money. And I also was interested in leaving all sense of fear behind. And he said, if you work only for love, the money will follow. The money will follow. And so I started to work with that in my heart. And I really began to live from an awareness that profoundly changed my life. And here's what it is. I realized that because we're all united in the oneness of all life, because there is just this one life expressing as each one of us, expressing as all of nature, Mother Earth, and all the kingdoms of the earth, but still united, just one. Everything that I receive from anyone and anywhere, I receive it from God. God is my source and my supply. No matter what it looks like, no matter what the appearance is, no matter what the illusion is showing me, everything that I'm experiencing is a gift from God. It's a gift from God. My mind is working with the divine mind to manifest, demonstrate, create my experience. What a gift it is from God that my thoughts are demonstrating in form. And that everything that I experience is divinely designed to assist me in awakening to my divinity. So everything I experience, everything I receive is a gift from God to assist me, to support me in remembering my true identity. So I decided to start receiving everything that way, including the person who's blowing their horn in traffic. You see how that can change your life? You see how you can become more receptive and more available if you recognize that everything is designed to support you. Some things are designed to strengthen you. Some things are designed to test your mettle. Now, also what I realized was that I could give and give and give. And I could give to anyone, anywhere, without strings, because everything I was giving to God, because there's only the one. So I was able to stop giving to get. And it profoundly changed my life. I was able to relax. It was amazing to be able to relax. To simply relax into spirit. And allow myself to live in that place of giving and receiving without strings. Without resentment, without fear. It taught me so much. And it helped make my life so much more abundant and prosperous and peaceful and harmonious and wholesome. Because I could give and give and give to one person, not trying to get something, not trying to fix them, but simply following my intuition, following divine guidance. And then somebody else could give and give and give to me, and I would feel worthy of it. I didn't feel like I would owe them, because I knew that I was giving where I felt called to give, and they were giving where they felt called to give. And that awareness allowed me to step into a life of ministry. Because I couldn't offer all the free classes and things that I do if people didn't make offerings to me to help support me. I wouldn't be able to pay my staff. I wouldn't be able to pay my rent. And the great thing is there was a time in my life when I was worried about how would I pay my rent. I didn't have a job. I didn't have a steady income. So I never knew what it was going to be like. Would I be able to pay my bills? And there were times when I really was, I can pay my phone bill or I could buy some food. What will I be doing today? These kinds of questions. So, you know, I had that experience of going from a place of consistently feeling that I didn't have enough, living in the mindset of lack and attack, and transforming that by changing my mind and working with my mind, and very importantly, opening my heart to love and making a commitment to be loving, to be the love. Not to try to get the love, but to be the love. Because when you set the intention to be the love, you recognize, maybe not immediately, but you start to realize that you live in a field of love. Love is your true nature, and it is an infinite supply, and you can either agree to live as love, or you can block the flow. Or you can block the flow. So I'm inviting you to set the highest aspiration that you can this year. The highest aspiration of how you want to be, how you would like to feel. At the end of the year, what would you like to be anchored in, unmovable, unshakable from? I remember hearing Reverend Michael say one time that he one year set the intention to be unbotherable. And he never needed to set another intention again. Because that just kept working for him. I invite you to set the intention to be unbotherable, but I would up-level it to the aspiration of to be peaceful, to dwell in the house of the Lord in your heart, to seek the kingdom first, which is within, and all else will be added unto you. What is the all else? The all else is the recognition that your true nature is peace. It is clarity. It is harmony. It is prosperity. This is our true nature, and if we're not experiencing it, it's because we've got something to learn, something to unlearn. And we can do that. That's why we're interested in spirituality. But many spiritual seekers don't put God first in their life. They do not put God first in their life. God is a hobby for many spiritual seekers. They don't actually intend to live the teachings. They study them more than they live them. And they give themselves permission on a regular basis to act completely contrary to what they know to be loving and kind and respectful and honoring and harmonious and healthy. So the biggest challenge that I see in the light worker body and the folks who are aspiring to be light workers, the biggest challenge that I see is their ability to be committed, to be constant. Constancy is a quality of God. It's a spiritual quality of God. God is constant. God is always the same. Of Course in Miracles talks about, and many wonderful teachings, the teachings of Shambhala, they tell us that our true reality is not the world of time and space. It's not the world of time and space. It is the experience we're having, the 3D experience of time and space is an illusion. It's an illusion. And I believe it's for us to awaken to our divinity. I believe it's a divine adventure that we collectively said that we would like to experience the illusion of separation. And I believe that many of us got caught, like getting caught in a whirlpool. We got caught. We got hypnotized. And now we're struggling to wake up. So this is why it's important to gather in spiritual community and to have prayer partners and to have fellowship with people, to be in study groups and to work with committed people. Now, one of the things I'm going to just take a sip of my tea here. My voice is still going through its change. Really is going through a change. It was in my astrological chart that at this time I'd be going through a change in my voice. So it's happening. One of the things I talked about in my Unity radio show this week, and I just discovered that for some reason the recording isn't in the podcast, but I'll just mention briefly, I have a radio show at Unity Online Radio. It's unity.fm, not .com, .fm, unity.fm. And the show is called Living A Course in Miracles, Walking the Talk. And if you go to iTunes, you can search for me, and you'll find the radio show there, and you can download it for free at iTunes. And if you do, I invite you to please write a review so more people will find it. Anyway, in my radio show this week, I was talking about how many spiritual seekers actually use their spiritual studies, like A Course in Miracles, to strengthen the ego. They use their spiritual studies, like A Course in Miracles, to strengthen the ego. And they have pride around how much they've done and how well they know the Course, and how many times they've been through it, and they don't actually take it into the heart. It's a mental exercise, and they're actually strengthening the ego. I remember in the first Living A Course in Miracles class, Paul Farini and I were talking about, or I think it was Paul Farini, maybe it was David Hoffmeister, we were talking about how some Course in Miracles students would almost rather beat you to death with the book than simply love you. So, what I'm inviting you to do this year, and this will make a huge difference in your life, is start to examine every way that you're actually strengthening the ego. And see if you can find out why that has value for you. How it is that you continue to do that. Now, one way that you can strengthen the ego with your spiritual practice is if you are making yourself read a book, but you're not really taking it in, you're not really applying it, and you're just reading it so you can tell people you read it. That's a way to strengthen the ego. If you're showing up at spiritual services on Wednesday, Sunday, whenever they are, just so people will see you. Isn't that strengthening the ego? If you're sharing in class just so people will notice you, isn't that strengthening the ego? By the way, these are all things I've done. So I'm outing myself, which I'm happy to do. I'm so grateful whenever I can realize, oh my gosh, I've been strengthening the ego by doing that, and I can stop. So many people make themselves go through the lessons in A Course in Miracles. They're strengthening the ego. Wouldn't it be more life-changing and powerful instead to simply sit with the book in your hand and think about what are the grievances that you cherish? And is that how you want to continue to invest yourself? Wouldn't that be 100 times more healing, 1,000,000 times more healing than trying to figure out some lesson in A Course in Miracles and do it perfectly? It's time for us to be spiritually awake and mature as much as we possibly can. Now, I would venture to say that you absolutely know where you are playing games with yourself and where you have spiritual pride and you are strengthening the ego. You probably know where you are acting like a spiritual victim and you're looking to get people, you're trying to manipulate and control people to think whatever it is you'd like them to think about you, have pity on you, or admire you, or whatever it is. It's time for us to say, oh, I can let that go. I can let that behavior go. I can love myself enough to strengthen my heart instead of the ego. Yesterday was Sunday, and I was speaking at Project Service LA, my spiritual community that I co-founded with Jesse Brune. And we live stream those services, by the way, and there's an archive of them. And I think there are part one and part two, and I think part two usually starts with my sermon or my talk. And I believe you can get all that information at jenniferhadley.com on the events page. So if you wanted to, you could go and watch some of those videos on the live stream. It's totally free. But I do think you have to register or something like that to access them. Maybe not, I'm not sure. Anyway, yesterday I was talking about how we get into ruts with our behavior and we become prisoners, we become slaves. And there are so many ways in which we literally are slaves to the ego. So one way that we can become a slave to the ego is we really are obsessed in some way about how the body looks or doesn't look. And that if in any way our sense of self-worth or self-esteem is tied to the body. Many people either feel unworthy because of their appearance or they feel a sense of pride about their appearance. Many people judge other people because of their appearance. They make assumptions and judgments about them. These are all ways that we play games of the ego. Many people adorn themselves in a way to actually hide their true identity because they don't think that God made them good enough. And so they're dressing in a way that's putting forth a false identity. Fake hair, fake nails, fake teeth, fake. Now, I'm not saying that we cannot have fun and play with our appearance. Believe me, anybody who knows me knows I am not saying that because I love to dress up and I enjoy playing with makeup and I enjoy getting my nails done. But I don't feel that I'm trying to pretend to be someone I'm not. I'm actually interested in being the most me I can be. And I do think that our dress and our adornments and all of that can be very fun and playful. But it's, are you putting on a mask? Or are you adoring yourself in a way that's simply recognizing that you're a divine being here to shine the light of your divinity, which can shine through your countenance. Your vibrancy. I do believe that we're effulgent beings, so we are light beings. So for me, one of the things that's very important to me is the care of my luminosity, my light being, my light body. So I watch what I eat, I exercise, I'm careful about the conversations I have and the feelings that I allow myself to be steeped in, all of these things. So many ways in which we can make little adjustments that add up to a lot. Now, I know one of the things that I used to do at the beginning of the year would be I would set intentions and I would make a list of goals and I would quickly get overwhelmed. And I do think that that is part of why I started teaching some of the classes I offer. So I have a 7-week class called Finding Freedom. It's my spiritual boot camp class, and I'm going to be starting the next one in the first part of March. I'm not sure what the date is, but in the first part of March, my next Finding Freedom class. And when the first time I offered that class, it was 3 months. And then I went to 6 weeks, and now I've settled on 7 weeks. Seems to be the perfect time commitment for people. And people really change their life in that class. And I noticed what a difference it made for people to be in a class that was really about becoming committed as a spiritual seeker and moving out of the intellectual pursuit of spiritual knowledge and into the embodiment of love and peace and harmony and wholeness and prosperity. Such a difference, and so wonderful to have a group to travel with in this work. Now, I got guided to, in the later part of 2008, I got guided after that first Finding Freedom to offer a 1-year class called Masterful Living, where people could relax into it for the whole year and work together to eliminate that which no longer serves, and step into the practices, the habits, the beliefs that profoundly support. And when I first got the insight to offer a year-long class, it felt daunting to me. It felt like a big commitment to hold the space for a group of people for a whole year and to commit to doing class every week for a whole year. And but it was such strong guidance that it would be good for me and beneficial to others that I did it. And that was 2009. So I've had 3 years of offering Masterful Living, and even have people who've done all 3 of those years and profoundly changed their lives. And it has changed my life as well. And what I've learned is that setting aspirations, intentions, and goals that support them, and being in a group, it helps people to hold the focus for the whole year, and they can actually accomplish their goals and realize their aspirations. It is so worth it. And Masterful Living, just so you know, and I'm going to take questions in just a few minutes, it's about the cost of a small latte a day. And let me tell you, a small latte a day is not going to, as much as I love spiritual espresso, it is not going to change your life for the better. Absolutely not. It's really not. There have been studies done that the average person spends at least $5 a day to the detriment of their health and well-being. The average person spends at least $5 a day to the detriment of their health and well-being. So Masterful Living, the basic class, is $97 a month, and you get quite a bit with it. You get a weekly class with me where you can ask me questions, and you get the download of that class. You also get the download of the transcript so you can read and listen and really get what it is that's being shared. You also get a call on Saturdays with your classmates and some folks who have already taken Masterful Living one or two times, facilitating those calls so you can talk with your classmates and discuss what you're learning, what your challenges are, what your wins and successes are. You also, if you choose, I will assign you a prayer partner from the class, and you can have a succession of prayer partners that you can do some one-on-one connection with. Some people actually meet some of their very best friends through those prayer partnership relationships. So a lot of deep healing that happens in those connections. And then we have a Facebook group where people share and get support every single day if they choose. And I offer tools and practices all year long. I give you optional homework. I don't require you to do the homework. We're all adults. You can play at your own speed. And right now, we just did the first week of my New Year's Intentions class. And we did a whole lot of beautiful, deep spiritual work around getting clarity about what the divine vision is for our life and what our aspirations for the year can be. And then next week we have part two of the New Year's Intentions, two-part class, which you can also purchase on your own. It's just $88. But for $9 more, you can have the whole month of Masterful Living. And then the week after that, we've got 3 weeks of my class called Stop Playing Small, which you can also buy separately for $127 for the 3 weeks. Stop Playing Small is really about getting clear about exactly why you are playing small. You will have total clarity about why you are playing small, and you will see what choices you need to make in order to shift so that you can really step into your magnificence. That's 3 weeks of Stop Playing Small class. And then after that, we have 3 weeks of Prayer Power, where I teach everybody basics about prayer. And I have had over the years in the Prayer Power class, I have had ministers and practitioners take that class. People who have studied prayer for years find value in it. So that's a three-week class really teaching you the basics of prayer so that you can feel powerful in your prayer work. And then the rest of the year is we do the spiritual work of Masterful Living and attaining a masterful life and setting that aspiration to live masterfully, powerfully, beautifully, magnificently. And it's an extraordinary experience every single year. It's different every year. And, oh, my goodness, this year the people are showing up. I have never experienced this many people showing up with this much dedication, authenticity. This is one of the beautiful things about Masterful Living is people really recognize that in our class we have such a high intention about being loving that everybody realizes that they can be transparent. They can be authentic. They can let the ego defenses down and they can be their true self. And they do that in class with their prayer partners and their classmates and with me. And then they can start to do it with their friends and their family and their coworkers. And they can literally shift all their relationships. It's one of the things we talked about this week in Masterful Living is that what the class is really about is recognizing that you have one relationship, and it's a relationship with God, and that relationship extends to every single person in your life. And it includes every animal, includes Mother Earth, all of life. So I'm inviting you to check out Masterful Living. If you enroll now, you'll get the New Year's Intentions, the Stop Playing Small, and the Prayer Power. And that's the first 2 months of classes. Plus, of course, you get the community calls and all the other pieces. And remember, you can ask me questions in the classes each week. So you really can have that personal connection with me. People are participating from all over the world, all over the world. They're making it work for them. Some people will never be live on a call because of their schedule, but they can still do the work in the class, connect with their prayer partners, and listen to all the recordings, get the transcripts, participate in the Facebook group. One of the things I'm inviting you to do this year is to get really clear about how do you take yourself out of the game. How do you let yourself off of your spiritual responsibility to stay connected, to have a practice? Without a strong spiritual practice, you will never have consistent spiritual growth. You will never awaken to your divinity. It's not possible. I tried. It's not possible. You have to have spiritual practice that is consistent. And that is the hardest thing for spiritual seekers. I've met ministers that tell me that the only time they take time to pray is in the shower. I've met people that have, you know, they don't even really think about having an actual spiritual practice. And they convince themselves that they don't have time. But let me just tell you, anyone with a true spiritual practice knows that it saves time. It saves time. Now, one more thought about time. I want to go back to Martin Luther King Jr. because, as I said, I'm a student of his. I feel like he's my spiritual father, my spiritual mentor. And he said, on a number of occasions, but most eloquently in his letter from the Birmingham jail. And I'll just tell you, so he was arrested for demonstrating nonviolently, and he was sitting in the jail cell, and he wrote this letter literally on toilet paper. And it was a response, the letter from the Birmingham jail was a response to letters he had gotten from Christian leaders who said to him, "Reverend King, we support your cause, but you don't have to do all these demonstrations. You don't have to make such a big fuss. Over time, eventually, the evils of racism and segregation will dissolve. You don't have to press the case like you're doing." And so in his letter, he said to them, There is nothing about the nature of time that heals anything. Time is nothing. It has no power. It has no volition. In fact, the people who are working for evil use time much more effectively than the people who are interested in love. Change never rolls in on time inevitability. What makes a change in this world is men and women who are willing to be co-workers with God, tireless co-workers with God. It takes dedication and commitment. Dedication and commitment do not come overnight. They start with a little mustard seed of willingness, a little mustard seed of realization saying, that's what I need to do. That's what will change my life. Working in the direction of being able to hold commitment, working in the direction of being able to be responsible for every choice that I make. This is what will change my life. My willingness to step up moment by moment, step by step, day by day. It doesn't happen overnight. It does take practice. And that's why it's spiritual practice. And what I can tell you is that the community of Masterful Living is a group of people who are starting right where they are. Some people actually don't enroll in Masterful Living because they don't feel they're spiritual enough. If you desire to be more loving, you are spiritual enough. We get there together. We walk together. It is so healing, nourishing, and powerful. And the least expensive I can make it and pay my staff is $97 a month. And to me, that's an incredible bargain. Like I say, it's the cost of a small latte a day. So I'm inviting you. Now, of course, you can make a difference in your life in a year without Masterful Living. Of course you can. And there's no doubt that I'll be offering some more free classes in the spring, the summer. I'm sure I will. I'll keep doing calls like this because I love it. And because I know that there are people who can't afford Masterful Living. I have hundreds of hours of things that you can download for free at iTunes. There's plenty of support for you. But if you'd like to be in this community, give it a try. You can always say, you know, it wasn't for me, I'm stepping out. I won't hold it against you. But what I know is, if you work with God, like Dr. King said, if you're a tireless co-worker with God, and you realize that time is not your ally, it is not your friend, it is nothing, God is everything, then day by day, you will become that true identity, and you will shed the false identity of someone who has problems and worries and isn't good enough and is lacking and confused. You will shed all of that because it is not your true nature. You can do this. You do not need my help to do it, but I am here to help you if you would like it. Regardless, do not let another day go by without honoring the preciousness of your soul and your soul calling. Don't let another day go by. That's why we're in January. The year still has that New Year smell to it. And we can do this. We can do this. Set an aspiration of what difference you can make in your life today, co-working with God, in partnership with your own holiness. Keep that intention fresh before you. Keep that aspiration in front of you. Write it down. Get a stack of 100 3x5 cards. and write that aspiration. My aspiration in 2012 is to be the change I want to see in the world. It is to be the peace and be the love and be the harmony, be the abundance, and share the benefits with everyone because I know I am one with them. Make a statement like that, an aspiration. Get a deck of 3x5 cards. Write it on every single one of them and put them everywhere. Put them under every sofa cushion in your house. Put them in your cabinets. Put it inside your closet. Put it in your glove compartment, in your wallet, in your purse. And tuck it into all the books that you read on a regular basis. Use it as your bookmark. Laminate it. Dedicate yourself to it. Don't allow yourself to forget it. You can do that. You can do that. You are one with the infinite. One with God is a majority. You have everything you need. Yes, you do. All right. So I am going to invite anyone who has a question about masterful living or about setting a New Year's aspiration, I invite you to ask a question. So you can either write a question or you can press star 2 if you're on the phone and that raises your hand, and then I can unmute you. So I'm going to go to the written questions. And Catherine here says, I've ignored a bombardment of negative gossip from my family. Started with my twin. I received praises from my clients and friends. My family is beyond reasonable. They even lie to support this negative environment. I have nothing to say or to do with them. What else can I do? They are taking up space in my thoughts. Thank you. Well, I think it's a really good question, Kathy. And so if anyone has someone that they are feeling attacked by, or they're feeling obsessive negative thoughts that they're thinking, one thing you can do is you can make a list of the judgments that you have about them. Just write them out. I judge them for this, I judge them for that, I judge them for this, I judge them for that. And then look at that list and decide how much of your life do you want to dedicate to judging them. Remembering that the judger always feels judged. So as long as you're judging other people, you will feel judged. The attacker always feels attacked. The judger always feels judged. I would venture to say, Kathy, that your family is feeling your judgments. The attacker always feels attacked. So they are attacking you. They are feeling attacked, and you're obliging them by judging them back. Those are probably the negative thoughts that you're thinking, right? Judgments that you're holding against them. So the way that I know is to recognize that somehow in this there is some pearl of wisdom. There's some pearl of healing and insight. And you can decide that you are going to harvest that pearl of learning and wisdom. Now, you may not know how to do that initially, but if you decide that that is what you're going to do, your higher Holy Spirit self, the divine, will guide you to how to harvest that learning and wisdom. But as long as you're interested in judging them even a little bit, that wisdom will elude you. It will elude you because you're more interested in what you think than in divine insight. And that's just how life is. So you have to open your mind to release the judgment, and then the divine insight will come in. And then you'll be able to share that insight with others, and it will become of great benefit to you. Now, one of the other things I can tell you is to pray. To pray for every single person, as Jesus said, pray for those who despitefully use you. So you pray for your enemies. Now, another thing I can give you See, and this is what I do all year long in Masterful Living. I give you concrete things that you can do that really work. They've been proven to work by many people. One of the things you can do is today's Martin Luther King Jr.'s celebration. Go to the internet, search for his speech called Loving Our Enemies or Loving Your Enemies. You can download the written text of it, print it out, or copy and paste it, print it out, the whole thing, and I've just got some ideas. Anyway, print it out and read it through and then get up on your feet in your living room, in your backyard, someplace where you feel safe and comfortable that you could stand aloud and read it. Now, before you read it aloud, I am inviting you to connect to the energy that Dr. King connected to when he delivered that speech that morning, that sermon, and connect to the energy of the people that heard it and the difference that it made in their life. Connect to the guides that were advising, the spiritual guides, the invisible guides that were advising Dr. King. And then read it out loud as though you are delivering that sermon for the very first time, to bring benefit to all humanity. That, my friend, will change your life. That will change your life. Anyone who does it, it changes their life. And I thank God for giving me the idea to do that. Okay, let's see. If you're on the phone, star 2 to raise your hand. And we've got a caller here. So I'm going to unmute you. And so you need to have quiet background noise. Here we go. Hey there, what's your name?
It's me, Reverend Jennifer Tina.
Hey Tina, what's your question?
Well, I just really have a comment that about the Martin Luther King speech, because that was one of the exercises that you gave me, and I just wanted to tell you that I did benefit from it, and I still do, and I want to say thank you for that, and encourage people to practice. And just share how wonderful it helped me in a lot of my areas in my life.
Thank you, Tina. Thank you so much. Happy King Day to you.
Happy King Day to you.
Now, you're taking Masterful Living for the second year. Can you just briefly say what difference taking Masterful Living was for you last year?
There were so many changes in my life due to Masterful Living, because it was giving me the spiritual direction in which to go, because I felt like I was a mouse that was in this maze and I couldn't find my way out. And I feel like Masterful Living gives you the guidance that you need to find the answers that are within you, and you develop your relationship with yourself and love yourself to the point where you do see God in everything that you do, and his love comes there. And I'm getting reacquainted with that, and I am so in love with myself now that I was not in love with myself. I couldn't see it. And every day when I practice my Masterful Living, it grows. And due to the fact that it's growing in me, I want to share it, and I want to go, and I seek love and other people, and I'm coming to the realization of where the judgments are rather than love, and I'm taking judgments. And you give us the tools how to handle these judgments and what to do with them if you don't know, and when I practice the tools that you give me, I'm able to disperse judgment and actually find the love that's there. And that has just been an amazing adventure for me.
Yeah, you've done extraordinary work, Tina. You really have. You've been very dedicated, and you've made a huge difference in your life. Hey, let me ask you, now your son Jesse, he's in his third year of Masterful Living. What have you seen in Jesse's life as a mother? I haven't asked you that question ever, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see so many changes in Jesse because, you know, at one time he was an alcoholic. And that is a really hard thing for a mother to stand by and watch. And I actually just had to let go of my son because of the alcoholism. And when he started studying Masterful Living, the alcoholism doesn't control him anymore. And I see where he's more spiritually grounded and he goes more to a spiritual side of things and that rather than alcoholism, and that is the biggest change I've seen in Jesse. And now that he's continuing his practice, I see a maturity of wisdom. I seek to listen to his words because I know they're spirit-filled and they're full of wisdom, and I didn't see that in Jesse, and now I do. And it's a growth, and it's continuous. And every time I hear something of him, I hear this wisdom and growth coming from him, and I'm going, wow, and it's exciting to see this. And I know it has everything to do with the fact that Jesse is learning to love himself, too.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
He is. He loves himself, and before he didn't. He didn't. So I see that. But I used to live in fear for my son. Now I don't. And even if he falls and he goes through hard times, it's a lesson. I don't see that as failure anymore. I see that as lessons, as so as I do in myself, too. And so now, and he sees it as lessons. He doesn't see it as failures anymore. And he doesn't treat himself as a failure. He treats himself as what God would want him to and what he is. So I've seen that in Jesse.
Aw, thank you for sharing that, Tina. I've seen it, too, and he is a beautiful and remarkable young man. You are a good mom.
Oh, he's a good son.
Yeah.
And you're a good teacher, Miss Jennifer.
Aw. Well, thank you, Tina. I love you both.
And I love you.
All right, thanks. I'm going to mute you back now, and you have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye. All right, so if anybody else wants to raise their hand, star 2 is how you do that. I'm going to go back to the written questions. BJ says, what is the driving force or inspiration that makes you continue to keep the connection with the divine spirit and God? Are we not all light workers? How do you grow consciously? Okay. So, what is the driving force or inspiration for me to keep the connection with God? Well, I think that's a really good question, BJ. And when I first started taking spiritual classes at Agape back in the 90s, and I would hear the ministers talk about how they loved God, it was confusing to me. Because I'd think, well, God is love. How do you love love? That just was so confusing to me. But now I think the best way to express it is, I love God. I love God. So it's like if you have a child in your life that you love them with this unconditional love that is motivating, it's driving you. You want to support them, you want to nurture them, you want to take care of them and provide for them. You might feel that way about a dog or a cat. Maybe you feel that way about a friend or someone, a romantic partner, where you feel this driving force of love to stay connected in the love, because the love feels so healing, it feels so nourishing. And the reason why I think it feels so healing and nourishing is because Love is our true identity. Love is my true identity. So when I'm connected in the love, I feel like myself. And I've come to realize that myself is this being of love and light. And it feels peaceful. It feels harmonious. It feels joyful. The joy is a quality of God that is not conditional. It's not based in circumstances. And that we really can choose to live an unprecedented life. It's a life that's not based on the past. And we can dissolve, we can tear down, we can relinquish the false identity and recognize, reclaim, recognize our true identity as beings of love and light. And no, I don't think we're all light workers. I have definitely met people in my life who were working for darkness. And they were very active and very committed. So they're light beings, but they're not working for the light. They don't know that they're light beings. How do you grow consciously? I would say that to me what that means is that you're actively choosing to learn, to awaken, to shed the false beliefs and thoughts, and to remember yourself as your true identity. So to do that consciously is to, from a place of saying, this is what I am choosing, this is what I'm actively choosing. One of the favorite sayings that I have right now, I got from a teacher of mine. It's quite beautiful. And she says, time is the teacher of the proud. Truth is the teacher of the humble. Truth is the teacher of the humble. Time is the teacher of the proud. So when we have humility, and as Tina was talking about, loving, you can love yourself when you have true humility. True humility is realizing that you are no better than and no less than anyone else. That you are indeed one with them. That to me is true humility. When you live in true humility, then truth will be your teacher. And you do not need time to learn a lesson. You can learn it. You can open your mind to it and fully recognize it instantaneously. So this is what we're aspiring to as spiritual students. We are aspiring to let truth be our teacher and to release time as our teacher. So the proud person will get the same lesson over and over and over and over again. The person who feels separate from God will get the same lesson over and over and over again. But the humble person, the person who is willing to recognize their divinity and the divinity of all life, will be able to recognize truth instantaneously. So this is what we're aspiring to. Good questions. I'm going to go back and see if anybody on the phone is pressing star 2 and would like to raise their hand. I am not seeing anyone raising their hand, but star 2 if you want to raise your hand. Oh, we got a couple of hands here. Okay, so there is someone in Rochester. I am going to unmute you. And hi there, tell us your name.
Hi, Jennifer, this is Nancy Gale.
Hey, Nancy.
Okay,
what's
I have
question?
A question. My question is, how do I, when I do anything, wanting to do the mastery class, or the Masterful Living class and the freedom, finding freedom, I always feel like I'm betraying the number one rule, which is I need permission. And I always needed my mom's permission to do anything, even get a drink of water and all that stuff. I still feel, and she's been dead for a long time. I still am operating under, I need her permission to live my life in anything. I want to know how I can get that permission or give it to myself. I know intellectually all that stuff, but to actually feel that I have permission to live myself, my life as myself and be myself. How do I do that?
Oh, what? How wonderful that you are asking this question. So I'm just going to take it in deeply. I'm not going to answer from history. I'm just going to put my hand on my heart here. I'm going to invite you to do the same thing.
Yep,
Nancy,
I am.
Right?
Yes.
And let's take that breath of love. If you don't mind, I'd just like to ask you, do you think that everyone needs permission from your mother?
Yeah.
Everyone does?
Yes. She's like the ruler of the universe.
She's the ruler of the universe.
It feels, yeah, that's how it was growing up.
That's how it was.
All my life.
Yeah. Do you think that her taking that position and teaching you that, did it cost her anything?
Yeah, probably. I mean, when she died, she never had any friends. She never had, it cost her probably everything. She died with all of that anger and hatred and stuff still in her.
Do you think that now that she's laid the body down, made her transition, and do you think that her spirit would feel some relief and release if you could release the hold that she has on you and to free yourself to live a life of powerful love? Would that bring some relief and release to her soul?
I would think so, yes.
Do you think that if she could communicate spirit to spirit that she might say to you something in answer to your question, and what might she say to you?
What might she say to me? She probably, I don't know, she might say she's sorry for being that way, for imprisoning me in that belief, for not allowing me to love anyone, including her, for not sharing her life with me, or allowing me to share life with anyone. I'm sure whatever made her that way, you know, like the way she was the result of how she was treated and stuff. So it's like an ongoing cycle of generation to generation. And that was, you know, that was how she did her life. And even though I'm sure she wouldn't have wanted to be that way. So if I could release her, if I could tell her that, or if I knew that would release her. That's what forgiveness is, right? Telling the truth.
Yeah. That's what I get. And if you could actively state to her, look, Mom, I'm letting the hold go. I am letting love into my life. I'm doing what you couldn't do, and I'm doing it for both of us.
Yes, that's, yes, yes, yes.
Whatever that looks like.
Yes, I can do that. Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, you remember Colin Tipping, in his book, mm-hmm. he has this exercise where you know, as far as the body goes, you take, like, the part of the body that's the problem, and you put mm-hmm. it in a chair. You make it, like, separate. Well, mm-hmm. I did that for a little bit. Then I said, well, why can't I do that with people or a part
yeah.
of myself, like, you know, a thought or part of myself? I could do that with my mom, too, right?
Oh, yes.
And
you
have that conversation.
Yes, you have a conversation spirit to spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And for everyone who's listening, you can do that with someone, whether they're deceased or they are still in a body. You can always have a conversation spirit to spirit because our spirit is eternal. And I remember reading in a book, it's a wonderful book, it's called Testimony of Light, by Helen Greaves, G-R-E-A-V-E-S. Beautiful, beautiful book, Testimony of Light. I think it's out of print right now, but I hope they'll reprint it. She talked about how people who make their transition and what happens with the spirit, and I'm not going to go into the whole story, but it's quite fascinating, and that people, after they make their transition, they still have to work with, some people then reincarnate, but there's a period where they're working with their regrets and their lost opportunities. And one of the things that can help them most is when the living pray for and forgive those who have made their transition. So one of the things I do is, for instance, with my grandparents are all transitioned. My mother passed away a few years ago. I make prayer for them on a regular basis. You know, and there were things that some of them did that were really hurtful to me. And I forgive, and I bless them and bless them and bless them and bless them. And I feel it really adds light to their soul because we're accumulating negative karma or positive karma, and to me the awakened person is recognizing the opportunity, or the awakening person is recognizing the opportunity to dissolve negative karma and to create positive karma, if you will, and that we can help our ancestors, our loved ones, our fellow beings to dissolve negative karma by forgiving them. And if they taught us something that's really detrimental and negative, then we can actively create a spiritual ceremony. I'm big on creating sacred ceremony for ourselves. And we can make a ritual, simple or as fancy as we want to, about forgiveness and about calling back our spirit, the fullness of our opportunity to love. And when we do that, we are assisting that person in healing the negative karma, which assists everyone because we're one with them. So I would invite you, Nancy, to also do some kind of a ceremony, and you might write a letter to your mom. You could maybe I like to do fire puja, and you can just Google puja if you want, P-U-J-A, but it's make a fire ceremony, and sometimes take a letter I've written and burn it in the fire with some sage and some incense, with the idea that whatever negativity has been trapped, whatever fear has been trapped, whatever the pain has been experienced, that Now we're releasing the suffering and harvesting the wisdom, the liberation, the joy. And these things are deeply and profoundly healing. Sometimes I have done that and put the ashes in the ocean, done different kinds of ceremony by the light of the moon and these things. And we've got a new moon coming up, and a new moon is a time of new aspirations, new intentions. So we can do all of these things, and then you'd be amazed at the energy that comes forth, the healing that comes forth. And sometimes a month or two will go by and suddenly you realize, oh my God, I was obsessed about that every day and now I don't even think about it anymore. How did that happen? So that's another thing, going back to what Kathy was saying about with her family, maybe to do some kind of a sacred ceremony where your intention is to release them, to forgive yourself for judging them, to forgive them. You know, the debts and the debting and the trespassing and the trespassers. So I feel the beauty of your heart, Nancy, and it feels to me that it would be tremendously healing and honoring of your mother and helping her to call back herself so that... And forgiving the ancestors who did what they did to your mom that impacted you, and sharing the benefit of your healing from now forward with all your ancestors. I have done that because I felt that my ancestors taught me to be very judgmental and controlling, which was created a tremendous amount of suffering in my life. Because I used to be very judgmental and very controlling, very manipulative. And I have had to work very, very diligently to reclaim my loving heart. And so I share the benefits of that with my ancestors and with the world. And I'm now grateful for all that I've learned because I can share it with others and it means so much to them. And it's not something I got in a book. I got it through blood, sweat, and tears. How does that feel to you, Nancy?
It's perfect. It feels true.
Yeah. What I would like to point out to you, Nancy, is you had the answer in you. I asked you what it was. Okay. That's what a good teacher does.
In ninth grade, the science teacher said that I always had the answer to the questions, and he finally shut me up. He says, I want a boy to answer. I never spoke. I've been muted so many times. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
No, there's nothing to be sorry about.
He asked us what we wanted
aspiration.
Yeah, but last week in my answer was I wanted my voice. I've been silenced for decades, never allowed being allowed to speak, and every time
get
I
get ready,
it,
world,
like,
here comes
quiet.
Nancy.
Yeah, well, the thing the answer came was like it's like voice, my voice. I want my voice. I want the my voice, my true voice, who I really am. I want to be able to speak that without fear of, being slapped in the face or shut up and all that stuff. But anyways, I haven't done my vision board yet, but I had, immediately I had all the answers and all the things and ideas, and it's like they were right there, like you said, they're all inside, but they're all they have to come out. I want to be free to have them all come out.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'll shut up.
No, it's beautiful. I love it. I look forward to lots more. And thank you. I love you, Nancy.
Okay, thank you. I love you, too.
Have a great day.
All right,
thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
And we have someone in Portland, Oregon who raised their hand as well. So let's see if you're, I'm going to unmute you. So need to be quiet in the background. Let's see.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi there. I've been listening to your talks that you've been giving, and I had sent in a question. I don't know whether you had received it, but I wanted to know, it's basically on finances, and I think you already answered it, because you said if you live within the love of God, then your finances will be there. I think that's what, didn't I write that down?
Tell us your name.
Marcus, I'm sorry.
Marcus. Well, you know what? Here's the thing, Marcus. We all have, this is what I believe. I believe that we all come into our human experience with an agenda, a curriculum. Course in Miracles calls it the script. And, for instance, for me, I think that one of the things I came in to learn in this lifetime was how to transform feeling confused.
Yeah.
And how to transform and transcend feeling heartbroken and betrayed,
mm-hmm.
and among other things. So you notice I don't feel like the thing that I wanted to learn was how to be happy all the time.
Yeah.
So sometimes there is a lesson about poverty that we're learning. But I would also state to you that the curriculum is constantly being adjusted by virtue of the choices that we make in each and every moment.
Right.
So I believe that I was one of those many, many, many light workers who believed that money was the root of all evil. And I had experiences in my childhood that taught me that people I loved would act crazy and angry and terrifying to me about money. Because I saw people I loved and people I admired get so angry about money that it was terrifying to me. And I knew that they could feel I was terrified, but they kept ranting and raving and doing the things that they did, not caring enough about me to stop their rant.
Right.
And so I saw people I loved and admired act crazy because of their fear around money. And that hugely impacted me, and I had to do a lot of work to release the idea that money made people act crazy, or that money made people betray their value, or that money made people hurt the ones they love. I had all these associations with money that I've had to really address and look at. And what I do is every time I have a healing, I have an awareness, an awakening, I share the benefits with everyone, that anyone, and I just do that mentally, and I give God the heavy lifting of however that has to work. So, because I don't actually know, you know, how to deliver that healing to the mind of God, or to rather the human race consciousness mind, but I intend to share whatever I've learned with everyone in one way or another. So right now I'm sharing it with you. So many people who are struggling with money, they have false beliefs that are ruling their mind. And we have to address them. And one way to do that is to really be in spiritual practice. Because what I find in my spiritual practice is, in my practice of prayer and meditation and contemplation, that I have healing awarenesses all the time. And that's where my healing happens, is in that. Or someone can say something and I hear the truth. And just like I was saying before, truth is the teacher of the humble. I can hear truth and go, oh, right, okay, now. I've heard that 1,000 times, but now I get it.
Yeah, okay, I see. So, I think I understand that it will, my answer will probably come through the meditation of trying to find the kingdom within, and in that realm, getting an answer
yep.
for that.
Yeah, but it, and if you're consciously intending to release whatever blocks you have to being in the free flow of giving and receiving prosperity and abundance. Because
right.
prosperity and abundance are spiritual qualities. They are not necessarily money. But as you know, our thoughts produce form at some level, and that form can be money.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Or debt.
Well, been there. And so, I mean, all of your talks that I've listened to have, you know, they seem to ring a bell with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I just didn't see it from that perspective. But I know that when I do the meditation and work on myself, those answers come eventually.
There you go.
I guess I just needed to have a little bit more patience.
Yeah, and find ways to deepen your practice. And are you a tither?
No, I'm not. But I that's where I would like to be. That's where I would like to go, but I don't have the resources to do that.
So you never have you never have any income whatsoever?
Well, I haven't lately,
nobody
no.
Has, yeah. Well,
that's why I'm not taking your Masterful Living class, because I know
yeah.
that one of your assistants had called me, and I was like, yeah, I'd like to take it, but I'm not going to, you know, I don't think it's fair that you did all that work, and then, you know, I can't pay for it right now, so that's not the reality of how it should be.
Well, I understand that, and I appreciate that, and good for you for taking advantage of the free things that I offer. But I will just say to you that a tithing practice where, again, we're not giving to get, and what it does is it the idea of a tithe is that you give a percentage to where you're receiving your spiritual food from. And one of the things that I believe and what I've seen demonstrated is that even the smallest tithe, given with great awareness and intention, it activates our own understanding of abundance and prosperity. So again, some tithers, they give to get. They say, oh, I'm going to give to my church, to my spiritual community, to my teacher, in order to get more abundance and more prosperity. But that's not how God works. But when we're giving from the overflow, then we get into that flow. And I have suggested to people like someone who waits on tables, they get tips every day. You know, just even if all you do is take a dollar and you go to the trouble of making that offering, you know, and if you don't have any income right now, but you still are, you have some money for food, you can take a portion of your food, you know, just even the crust of a bread, and you make an offering of that. You go outside and you make prayers and you make an offering to Mother Earth.
Okay.
So you make prayers. That's your offering. You can make offering in the form of burning some incense or lighting a candle. You see, there are many ways to begin to get into a life where your life is making offerings all the time.
Okay.
And that puts you in the flow of the energy of abundance and prosperity.
I like that.
Yes, it's a very powerful, Marcus.
I like
that. So let me know how you do with that. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I listen to your Unity program, or at least I have. I've been trying to listen to your Unity program in the morning. I didn't realize that it was Central Time when I first saw it. So, but now I get... I'm on the West Coast, obviously, so I get up and I listen to it live on the computer. So, and then I
beautiful.
I usually email you, and I was like,
I know
when you answered. I know I when you answered back really quick, I was like, how'd you do that? So I was like, I will do the offering. So that's good.
There you go. Yes.
That's good.
You can make, and you know what you can also do is you can make an offering of water. Take a glass of water, make prayers over it, and give some to the north and some to the east and some to the south and some to the west, and you turn and you make offerings.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's never that we don't have. We always have, and we're sharing from what we have.
Okay.
Yeah, beautiful. I'm sure many were benefited by your question. Thank you, Marcus.
That's interesting. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, God bless. Love you.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
All right, so I am going to, we've got a bunch of questions here on the internet. I'm going to just see if I can whip through a few here because we're an hour and 40 minutes, so this is longer than I intended. Let's see. Joan has a question here. I understand the whole illusion. However, why is it so hard to dissolve the illusion and bring you into awareness? And why do we all experience the same illusion? Meaning when we are together, we witness the same event, even though we may perceive it differently. We still witness the same event. We're collectively having this experience, Joan, and we're one with each other. So I think that's the best way I can explain that, is that we are one, and this 3D experience is, I think, very carefully created so that we are having the experience of individuation and separateness, and we're agreeing to do it. In order to learn, in order to bring benefit back to the collective oneness. That's what I believe, and that's my short answer to that. And then why is it so hard to dissolve the illusion? Here it is. It's because so often we are attached to it, and we are strengthening our attachment to the illusion of separateness. So anytime we judge another person, we're saying, oh, I really like being separate. I'm going to affirm that I am separate from them and judge them. Because if we knew we were one with somebody else, we wouldn't judge them because we would know that we would be attacking ourselves. And that would be insane. So in the smallest ways, we affirm that we like the idea of separation. And that's why it feels so hard to dissolve the illusion. It's very challenging to let go of all the ways in which we cherish separation. That's what makes it so hard. Siggy is saying he'd like to take Masterful Living and would like help and doesn't have a job. So here's the deal with the Masterful Living class. I offer many things for free. Masterful Living is not for free. I have to do some things with an exchange of money because... I have a staff to pay, and I have my own bills to pay. I do as much free stuff as I possibly can. So, but I am happy to enroll someone now who is willing to make an agreement to pay, for instance, when they do have a job, and that you will make those payments up then. I'm always happy to accommodate someone with that. So if you would like to do that, then just send me an email at jennifer@jenniferhadley.com and let me know what is the agreement that you would like to make. And I will happily take your word and trust you. And I'd be very happy to do that. That's, you know, that's life. Yes, will the recording of this call be available? Yes, and I will email everybody and let you know how to get that. And right now, you know, I did two more calls, two free calls, and in December, and those are available for download and listening somewhere in the middle of the Masterful Living class page where you can read all about Masterful Living. Those two calls are in the middle there, and this one will probably end up being there eventually too, but I will send you an email and let you know. Sarah says she's still confused about the Saturday calls in Masterful Living. They are group calls, just like this is a group call, and it's part of the Masterful Living class, so it's part of that curriculum, it's part of that tuition, and they are recorded. And right now we're doing one call per week for the community calls in Masterful Living at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern, and that's 5 p.m. UK, 6 p.m. Germany. And you can, just like on this call, you can either Skype in, call in, or participate on the Internet. And as more and more people share in those Saturday community calls, we'll probably have a second call or maybe even a third call in different times to offer more flexibility for the group. So last week's call was really good. I listened to it. And let's see. Thank you for that question, Sarah. Denise, how is the individual important when all of us are one? Are all of our perception, learning, and forgiveness opportunities to see what we are really seeing in ourselves? Well, as individuals, we have an opportunity to dissolve, this is what I believe, to dissolve and heal the negative karma that we have created, which affects the collective. So things happen in the world and in the universe because of our thoughts. For instance, the Gulf oil spill is a representation of collective thought, of not caring about Mother Earth and caring more about the oil, not caring about the water and caring more about ourselves. You know, things like plastic bags and all of the things are made of plastic, many of which are recyclable. Many people don't even bother to recycle, even though they could. They don't bother to wash them out, and so they just throw them away, but they could be recycled. And when we don't value the resources that we have, something will happen to get our attention to recognize that we're out of integrity with our divinity and the divinity of all life. So an individual, and here's another thing. Think of the impact that Martin Luther King Jr.'s life made on all of humanity. People who don't speak English know who he was and the difference that he made to the whole world, to the human race. So it's not that the individual is important, it's that the individual has possibility. We all have divine possibility. And so one of the prayers that I've made many, many times is to live the highest possibility of my Dharma. And the Dharma is the teaching that I can bring through my life experience. Sharon's sending love and appreciation. All right. So I think I've gotten through everything. And long call. And I'm going to say a prayer here and just to finish this out. And I want to give thanks. I always say that it's our, oh, we've got Francis. One more question, Francis. Hey, Francis.
Hello, Jennifer?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
It's actually Carl Francis.
Oh, hey, Carl.
Okay. I wanted to talk to you about strengthening the ego. A few years, you know, for a long time, Jennifer, I continue to read the Seven Spiritual Laws of Success. And
mm-hmm.
there was a question in there that said, what would you do if you had all the time in the world and all the money in the world? And, you know, I got to a point where I didn't want to face that question because more and more as I read it, I heard from my heart that I would write. And I kept saying, oh, no, no, you're not going to write. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. You're going to get rich instead of write. Well, eventually a little divine intervention occurred, and I was about to be fired again from a job that I had. And I said, well, I decided I would quit before they actually fired me. And I said, well, what will I do? And I said, well, I will write. So I began writing. I began picking up my pen and attending a writing group and started writing. And I've been published quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
And more so than a lot of the people in the writing group. But I realize that there are times when I write something and I take it to the writing group and I realize that I'm bringing something there because, you know, I want to receive all their admiration and praise and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize that, you know, sometimes I'm writing something and to bring it to the writing group, you know, in service of the ego, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than service of humanity or God. In fact, I have a couple of things. I started writing a memoir within the past year, and I have a segment that I've written the first draft, and I thought I'd bring it into the group, and I decided, well, you know, I didn't really want to bring that particular segment in because I didn't want their pity or sympathy because of the background and upbringing I had, you know, with the challenges with my father, et cetera. And I have another segment about an incident that occurred just yesterday. I haven't written it yet, but I, you know, that is something that probably would not cast me in the light of a victim. So I thought I might write that up and bring that segment into the group. So I just thought, you know, because I'm a longtime Course in Miracles student, and I know you mentioned, you know, something about, you know, a lot of people use that to strengthen the ego, and, you know, that brought up a little concern with me. But I realize, I know that sometimes I go to the writing group, and I go there in service of strengthening the ego because I feel I've been published a lot more than many of the other people in the group, that kind of thing.
Thanks for sharing that. That's a beautiful example. And isn't it great to awaken to that and realize, oh, I can make another choice now.
Okay. True. Yeah. Well, it's true. I mean, but I like going to the group, and I love writing, you know. I mean,
yeah.
That was my dream when I graduated from college, and it took me about 25 years afterwards. I dabbled in it right after college. You know, I didn't pursue it with the vigor that I'm pursuing it now. So.
Well,
I am aware that sometimes I go to the group with a piece, and I'm going there because I think, hey, you know, this is good, and they'll enjoy it, and they'll tell me what a wonderful writer I am, you know.
Well, I've been there, done that, so I know exactly what you're talking about, Carl. I'm sure you helped a lot of people by just sharing that. So thank you. I love you, and
I love you too. I've been benefiting a lot from the course so far.
Oh, good. Yay. I'm glad to hear it, Carl.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You have a great day. I'm going to mute you out, and I'm going to invite everybody to place your hand on your heart. Thank you for your deep listening, your open heart, your open mind. I really appreciate you. I always say that the deep listening is what pulls the material through me, and I always learn things, and it's always nourishing and nurturing for me to discover what I knew that I didn't know. And the heart connection. So I want to thank everyone who shared their questions online and on the phone and comments. And let's, with our hand on our heart, take a breath of love and open our heart to love this day, this moment, this year. And let us all be grateful that we can be more willing and we can set a strong and powerful aspiration to be our true selves. And that this year we can make such a profound difference in our own life, in all of our relationships, in our spiritual practice, in our community, in our workplace, and on the planet. That it literally will be felt around the world, healing and nourishing for all beings. That this is our divine opportunity and we're claiming it. We're not making light of it. We're stepping up into the true responsibility of the loving heart. And we are saying that we are worthy of that which has been given us. We are worthy of the kingdom. And so we seek the kingdom first, so grateful that all else will be added unto us. In gratitude, we truly do share the benefits with everyone, and we rejoice to let it be. And so it is. Amen. 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 Thank you, everybody. God bless. Have a beautiful day, and I'll see you in the light.